gone so long, she been gone, gone, gone so long. I gone, 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 she been gone so long, I gone, 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 gone so long. I gone, 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 she been gone so long, she been gone, gone, gone so long.
She didn't have to leave me, she didn't have to run, she didn't have to go without a word to anyone. I hope she's doing alright, got no way to know, unless she gets to hear this song, hear it on the radio. My girl, she was a world to me, she's gone, and that's a tragedy. My girl is just a memory.
So long, she been gone, gone, gone so long. I gone, 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 she been gone so long. I gone, 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 she been gone so long.
Gone, 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 she been gone so long. Well, I wonder if I ever gonna see my girl. Gone, 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 she been gone so long. Wonder if I ever gonna see my girl.
I hope she gets the message. Gotta get it back, you know.
Wonder if I ever
gonna track her down. I'll find that girl. Gonna tell her that I love her so.
Wonder if I ever gonna.
Put the word on the grapevine, spread it all around the world. Sooner or later, I know we're gonna get up talking about my girl.
You're listening to Speaking of Music, a show by and about musicians. I'm Barry Livingston. Today we have a really special show for you, part two of an interview with Canada's most awarded and accomplished singer-songwriters and guitar players, Bill Henderson. Bill is probably best known for his work with the iconic West Coast band Chilliwack. They achieved multiple chart successes with many of Bill's amazing songs, including Lonesome Mary, Fly at Night, My Girl, Gone, 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 and What You Gonna Do, all of which can still be heard on the radio today. In 2015, Bill was appointed to the Order of Canada, and in 2019, Chilliwack was inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame. Bill was also inducted into the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2023, and finally in 2024, Chilliwack was inducted into the Canada's Walk of Fame. Bill has also served as president of both SOCAN, the Performing Rights Organization, and the Songwriters Association of Canada, as well as being past co-chair of the Canada Music Council. I had the good fortune of befriending and getting to know Bill a bit when I lived on the West Coast, and I can honestly say that he's a great person and a friend and support to many musicians on the scene. Bill, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
I hope I didn't go overboard too much on that intro for you. There was a band, actually a friend of mine lived in Vancouver then around that time, and he mentioned that there was a band called Mother Tucker's Yellow Duck, and that you guys either opened up for them or they opened up for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they. I think they probably opened for us. We were kind of because we had gone down to the States and had made a couple really successful records and everything, when we came back to play in Vancouver, we were kind of returning heroes. So, and Mother Tucker's Yellow Duck, the bass player in there, was someone who I'd gone to UBC with, and he was in the music program as well, Charlie Faulkner. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall writing your first songs with the band and what the experience of that was like, you know, just getting your first material together and working together with other songwriters to put a you know, really good song together that gets on the charts?
Yeah, I do remember it was I had some things to learn, and I think I learned them pretty fast. One of the things I thought about songwriting before I'd really done it, and before I was working with a band that could play songs really well, I kind of thought I was coming out of the university, the academy, and I thought I had to write every note, and I could put it on paper and everything, and tell everybody exactly what to play. Well, I soon found out that that's BS. And any songwriter will tell you that what you do, you got a song, okay, that's good. Now, get great players, they will play what's right for that song. They know what to do. And that's the truth. I learned that pretty fast. I just let go of all of that, and I just went, okay, what we're talking about for songwriting is lyrics, which I didn't do anything with. I didn't know anything about them. Howie did mostly our lyrics. Melody and chord structure. That's what you're working with. And the band, the drummer and the bass player are going to find the groove. If you are grooving when you sing that song, you just play it with your guitar and you're singing and you're grooving, they will know what to play. And you might not know what they should play. So that was a huge, huge lesson for me. And I took advantage of it. Of course, it meant less work, which is great. And I could concentrate on the things that I found really interesting.
In 1969, how did the band Chilliwack emerge out of the Collectors? And did you guys get a contract right away, or did that take a while?
We got a contract pretty fast. The Collectors had lost a bit of wind by then, and we were going in a new direction, and it was improvisation. And we would do things like, one night we played in Pasadena, in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, and we were opening for Vanilla Fudge. Vanilla Fudge had this great drummer, very well-known drummer, Carmine Appice, and he was the leader of that band, I believe. Anyways, they were very, very popular. They had they would take Motown songs and slow them way down and make them heavy, and that was their thing. So was that song? Let me go, don't you, babe? Yeah, my life, my don't you, babe? Keep Me Hanging On, that's what it was, Diana Ross and the Supremes. And they did that. They did it really slow and heavy, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty neat stuff. Anyway, we're opening for them. So it's time for us to play, and Howie and Glenn are not there. Howie, our lead singer, Glenn, our bass player, are not there. They're late, and we have to go on stage. So we went on stage. We weren't afraid of that because we'd done a lot of improvising. So we just, Ross on the drums, Claire on sax, me on guitar, which is what we ended up being in a version of Chilliwack. We just started playing, and we were making stuff up, and it was going really well. It was fantastic, actually. Glenn and Howie arrived. They jumped up on stage, and Glenn got his bass going, and Howie started doing stuff with his vocals and everything. And we finished this jam, and the place went nuts. You know, they absolutely loved it. And the next thing we did was our What Love Sweet from the first album. And That was an 18-minute piece that was one side of the album, and very sort of orchestrated kind of thing that we had done. And at the end of that, they were just, the audience just went ape. They were going crazy. They, you know, it was just it just worked so well, and everybody had was so, you know, so tripped out on it. So that was a direction that we have been developing, improvisation. And this went on and became where Chilliwack went for the first 2 or 3 years of its life. And by the way, when we finished that song, What Love in Pasadena, and we stepped off the stage and walked back to the dressing room. Coming out of the dressing room was Carmine and the Vanilla Fudge, and Carmine was saying to the guys, "We just do what we do. We just do what we do." They were worried. So, yeah.
Oh man, these are such great memories and stories of what it was like at the time. I'm curious as well. You guys, I remember getting the first Chilliwack. My first Chilliwack single was "Fly at Night." And what record label was that? Mushroom Records, or was that another label?
It was Mushroom.
Yeah, I remember, like, actually the label, you know, having a mushroom on it. But obviously there was a prelude to that where you guys obviously were working hard, doing a lot of playing, and eventually it got you to the point where you got some songs on the charts, and those songs were within that sort of format that was required for AM radio at the time. Did it sort of take a while before you guys learned to, you know, shape songs in that way? Or, you know, obviously you had a bigger repertoire than just that. You had, you know, number of, you know, the improvisation thing going on, and also the ability to get some songs on the radio as well.
Yeah, we were busy writing songs, and, you know, one of the ones that came out prior to Fly at Night, it came out in 71, I think it was Lonesome Mary. And that one did quite well for us, and it also was something that it was written in a way, on purpose, that it could be open to improvisation. Once the song part had done its bit, then we could just hang out on this big D chord and improvise, and we did that night after night and did really, really well with it. But I was... You know, there were other times when we'd make an album and there was nothing on it that anybody wanted to play, that radio wanted to play. And this was very dismaying for record companies. You know, they'd made their investment. They paid the money to have the record made, and it wasn't making the money back. So that's their whole thing. You know, I mean, they're in business. And, you know, as much as we might feel, well, they should just pay us to stay alive and eat, they had other ideas. They wanted to make money. So what I learned something that was really interesting. I used to play my guitar every day. I'd be at home. And when I was at home, I'd play my guitar every day. And mostly I played in the kitchen. We didn't have very big places in those days, and the kitchen was the main sort of social room, and my wife would be making beautiful food, and I would be playing my guitar. And I was kind of practicing as a guitar player. I was trying to develop my chops and everything, but then I'd settle into something that I was enjoying, and I'd do this, and a lot of times she'd say, "I like that. What is that?" I'd say, I don't know. I just happened upon it, right? And then I'd start to work on it. She liked it. You see, she is someone who doesn't know anything technically about music, never wanted to, and still doesn't. But she loved to dance, and she loved music. So when it connected with her, she didn't necessarily know why. She didn't know what it was about it, but it worked. So what I did was I just kind of fished. I put down the bait like I'd be playing. And if she'd say, I like that, then I'd go, okay, and I'd work on it, right? And I always say that that was one of the two things that my wife said to me that were the most important things a songwriter can hear. And the first one is, I really like that. What is it? The second one is, I liked it better before. And the thing that's so great about the second one is, you know, you get an idea, but it's just an idea, and you got to turn it into a song. That's where the craft comes in. And, you know, you got to learn your craft. And a lot of times I didn't know the craft, and I'd go astray, and she could feel it. Like, it just wasn't happening anymore. It was exciting before. It's not exciting now. Something happened. What happened? So this was a study for me, and what I learned was that if I just sat there and let something emerge, I would always get better quality material than when I tried to put it together with my brain. That brain in the front that absolutely went to sleep when I played my first gig in Ladysmith on the saxophone is the very brain that interfered with my songwriting. And I learned that I have to just, there's time for it, but it's not at the beginning. And it's always, you've always got to be able to turn it off and just listen. And I used to do things in the studio after I learned that. The same thing applied to singing. After I learned that, I would go back, after I'd done a vocal in the studio, I would go back in the control room, and we're all listening to see if it's a good vocal or what, right? And I just looked at the speakers, which didn't have cloth over them. They're the bare speakers. You can see them moving. And because they're moving like that, I would imagine that it's the speakers that are doing the singing. It's the speakers that are made this song. It's all coming from there. And I dial my ego out in that way and just see if I liked it or not. And if I didn't like it, I knew I didn't like it. If I liked it, I liked it, you know, but it wasn't me protecting myself. It was just, I mean, some people can do this without going to the extreme lengths that I've had to go to myself, but I couldn't. I had to dial myself right out of the thing before I could really actually hear it. So songwriting has been a huge adventure for me. In that way, because I'm also all the time learning my craft, and I've done many, many songwriting workshops where I'm one of the workshop leaders, and there are certain things I can help people with, but I would listen to my cohorts sitting at the table who maybe were Nashville songwriters or other, you know, really well, songwriters who really have done well. And I would listen to what they said, and I learned things from them. And I would try them myself, the things that they recommended. I would try them myself. And, it helped me learn how to write lyrics and, learn about the how to analyze the structure of a song, what a song wants and what it doesn't want, what a verse wants. Does it want a chorus or does it want a bridge? What's the difference? There's a big difference. And there are different functions. You know, they actually, and it's got to do with what the music has started and is asking for. Can you hear it? Can you hear its voice? What is it asking for? Does it want you to jump up and do something really different? Or does it want you to just continue with what you got and move it a little bit to the left or right? Or, you know, some kind of variation. Those kind of things, which really are intuitive for a lot of great songwriters, they're also things you can learn.
Bill, just to wrap up, do you have any thoughts on the current music industry, the way it is now, and how musicians can perhaps monetize their music going forward? Because it's a completely different model, it seems, than when you guys were, you know, putting out, you know, the records that you're talking about in 70s, 80s, and getting a lot of airplay.
Yeah, it certainly is completely different. And, I have not paid a lot of attention to it, mainly because I don't have to. Because I go out now with Chilliwack and we play those old songs plus a song or two that is new. But I'm relying on those old songs to satisfy the people in the room. And of course, I get an audience that likes those songs. So, you know, I've kind of isolated myself, not like it was when I was starting out, when I was reaching everywhere and anywhere I could. So I'm not the best person to ask that question of, but there are a couple things I can say. One of them is that songwriting and performance of a singer, the performance of a guitar player, the performance of a drummer, those things are not all that different. And some of it is exactly the same as it's always been. You know, songwriting, you listen to it and you go, well, that's pretty different to the new stuff. You listen to the new stuff, but you know what? It's not all that different. There's a couple things that are different, mainly, you know, they've changed the way melodies, the kinds of melodies they favor and the kind of notes they favor. But that's always the case. I mean, if you were playing the old Broadway material, the American Songbook material, or if you were playing Latin songs, or if you were playing, you know, R&B, all of those things, they each have their own flavor, and you have to learn how that works. And you know, the new stuff, and of course, there's many different kinds of new music that are out there, but there are patterns there for people to learn. The problem is monetization, as you say, and I have to say that I was part of a group of people that saw digital coming, that knew that we had to take care of songwriters and musicians in the coming years, and we worked really hard at it, and we got a lot of agreement with the proposals that we made, but we could not get the three major record companies to agree to what we were presenting. What we were presenting was an equal split of revenues for the performance and also the sale of recordings, whatever form that sale might take. An equal split, writers, performers, publishers, and record companies. Those are the four groups that had been represented in contracts through the 20th century, and we wanted it to be an equal split. Some of it already was an equal split between writers and publishers. It was generally speaking an equal split. Of course, every contract is different, but the standard was equal. But not so with record companies. And these record companies would not agree. And they came up with Spotify, and that is one of the worst paying organizations for performers, for recording artists. However, there are things going on that are good for monetization. One of them is neighboring rights. Neighboring rights in Canada is administered by, there are a few different organizations that do it. I have ACTRA, RACS, R-A-C-S, that is ACTRA, A-C-T-R-A, and R-I-A-C-S, R-A-C-S, ACTRA, RACS. And what they do is they collect royalties for the performance of music on broadcast media. And of course SOCAN does that, but SOCAN does it for writers and publishers. ACTRA RACS is doing it for performers and perhaps for records. I'm not sure, but they are doing a better and better job every year. They're getting better all along, and so I recommend anyone who is a performer who wants to get paid for the use of their music in broadcast media, and I think they have a number of different ways of, not just broadcast media, but I'm not sure about that. Anyway, they're good. And the other thing I've noticed is an organization called Sound Exchange seems to pay pretty well for digital, you know, use of your music on the internet and all of that, you know, streaming and stuff. Yeah, streaming, various streaming services. Sound Exchange collects from numerous services. And if you're affiliated with them, you will get paid by them. And that's pretty good.
Bill, I really appreciate you joining us today. It's been like amazing and many revelations talking with you as well.
Oh, thanks, Barry. I enjoyed talking to you, and I always enjoy unloading this stuff.
Whereas the undersigned has pledged to abide by the terms herein, and with respect to all debts past and future, does hereby covenant to pay promptly. Traders, company may be silent or round a day.
Sign here, become a millionaire. Sign there, sign here, become a millionaire.
We hope you've enjoyed today's interview with guitarist and songwriter Bill Henderson. For all things related to Bill and his band Chilliwack, you can check out the website, www.gonegonegone.com. The songs accompanying today's interview are My Girl, Gone Gone Gone, and Sign Here from the album Wanna Be a Star. I'm Barry Livingston. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Music.
Sitting, waiting for you, but you never came home. Fall asleep on my own, I'm all emotional, 'cause you said you wouldn't be long. I've been calling, calling, but you never answer the phone.